Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, here's a quick question. Coming in to do these podcasts, do you have any kind of a ritual, any kind of a, like a, do you have any lucky items you bring with you? How do you prepare in terms of superstition
to do a
science podcast?
Here's something that you never wanted to know about.
Okay.
I used to wear lucky underwear.
Okay.
But then I realized how ridiculous that was, and I quit the practice.
Huh.
Yeah. Not of one wearing underwear, but, you know, a specific pair. But yeah, I mean, it's very easy to attach meaning to something, right? And I found myself, and I think I'm pretty pragmatic, right, in my thinking, and I found myself.
I used to think that.
Yeah. Now you're like, oh, underwear out of mind. But yeah, I mean, you can't help but sometimes make those associations.
I guess. I mean, I can't, I mean, I, on the clothing front, I don't think I've ever experienced anything like that, because I tend to think of clothing and like, well, this pair of pants is more comfortable than the others. So in that respect, like, those will be my lucky pants, and that when I wear them, my body feels better. And
so lucky for you is comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. But there are other rituals that I do have. I mean, not so much rituals, but I guess I'm kind of, there's something in me that's kind of maybe an amulet junkie. Like I feel like I could adapt really easily to say, like, you know, like Thai amulet culture. In fact, I carry a Ganesha in my pocket, like a little figurine.
Ganesh, the overcomer of obstacles,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, the Hindu god that people may recognize as having kind of very much an elephant look, mm-hmm. and standing on its vehicle is like a rat. It's not that I like rub the figurine before each podcast, mm-hmm. or there's something about just I have to put it in my pocket when I leave in the morning. And if I don't watch myself, I'll accumulate other amulets along the way. It'll be like something that just doesn't make a particularly large amount of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like when we were like cleaning out my some of my father's stuff after he died, there was this roll of silver dollars. And these weren't like dear to him or anything. I don't think I'd ever seen these silver dollars, but I ended up like slipping one in my pocket and carried it with me a lot for several months.
And that makes sense to me, though, because that's something that, you know, it's maybe you're associating it with your father and you wanted to keep it close to you, or, you know, as a symbol of your
but
father.
But there were, if I were going to like consciously set out to like, all right, I will pick out an amulet that reminds me of my father, or is, you know, I mean, it gets into the whole thing, the whole power of sympathy and the way our minds work. We ended up attaching meaning to this, to an object that has come into contact with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So if I were to like consciously say, what's an object that was dear to my father that I could carry as an amulet, that would not be it. Like, I don't know why that ended up in my pocket for so long. Or sometimes it'll be like a particularly good day or a good outing or a good date that I've gone on with my wife, and I'll like pick up a rock,
mm-hmm.
and it'll go in my pocket. Not even a pretty rock, not like any kind of like a fine quartz kind of thing or something that would wind up on a geologist's shelf, but I'll end up like sticking in my pocket, and it'll become kind of an amulet of that day. And so I have to watch that. And try and keep it to just one.
Well, you've got some hoarding tendencies. That's what I'm hearing.
Not, I don't think, no, it's hoarding if they're kind of like magical amulets, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And if
or,
you guys,
or keepsakes, if you will, like tiny keepsakes that remain on your person.
Right. That have some sort of power to you in some sense.
Yeah.
As much as we hate to admit it, these things do have a power over us. And if you guys out there haven't guessed it already, we're talking about the science of lucky pants.
That's where we're coming back around to.
Yeah. That, you know, we can't help but wear those lucky pants or pick up that rock, something that means a lot to us that makes us feel like, you know, we've got some sort of control over the chaos of our lives.
Yeah. Like, what are some more that you've seen? Like, because I have a friend who does this thing where if she is speeding through a red light,
mm-hmm.
well, not really a red light, but say an orange light, yellow light, turning red.
Oh, you're giving her a break there. Yeah.
She'll do this thing where she hits the roof of the car. Like it's some sort of like a luck thing to not get caught by a traffic cop.
There's the rub, right? The luck. This idea that we are actually getting some sort of magical luck from the ritual, really.
Yeah, we're doing something to influence the outcome.
Yeah.
Right.
I was thinking about the speed skater Chad Hedrick. He collects fortunes from fortune cookies because before the 2006 games in Turin, he got a fortune cookie that said, "Your golden opportunity is coming." And he went on to win gold, silver, and bronze medals.
Whoa.
And now he hangs out with like 20, 25 fortune cookie fortunes in his pocket at any time. He's become a fortune cookie junkie.
Wow. How does he stay in shape eating all that cookie, you know?
Oh, I'm sure, you know, he just probably calls up his local takeout and, you know, just chops through them and doesn't necessarily eat them.
I wonder if he gets irritated with the fortune cookies that don't really have fortunes per se, but they're just kind of like, here's a little bit of good advice, in mangled English.
Yeah. I get that on my tea sometimes. My tea package, you know, the little, tag on it.
Yeah. It's like,
and it depends on, I can always tell what sort of mood I'm in, because either I'm like, oh, that's beautiful, or I'm like, oh man, just take it somewhere else.
Yeah. Or it's like, that's not really cosmic insight. That's just good advice. That's just like saying something like, I don't know. See, that's how devoid of a feel goodery I am this morning. I can't think of any kind of, crappy little, fortune cookie thing, but at any rate, yeah, people do.
It's early this morning.
It is kind of early. We're having to record rather early. But yeah, so things of this nature, people collecting items, people performing rituals, people sticking to some sort of lucky garment. And I do mean sticking to it.
Literally, because we know with sports people that sometimes they don't change their lucky socks, right?
Right.
Like baseball sports people. How illiterate am I in the field of sports that I can't use the correct terminology? But baseball people who won't change their socks and become terribly smelly.
I remember reading about there was this pro wrestler who wrestled by the name of Vader, who it was based out of Atlanta. I don't know if he lives in the area or not. Yeah, I think he's pretty much retired now. But he was like this big, beefy, kind of bull-looking guy. And supposedly there are people that really hated wrestling him. And, you know, this is pro wrestling. This is all sort of scripted violence going on with a certain amount of improv. But his lucky
ritual.
Thanks
for shattering the illusion.
Yeah, sorry. Oh, but his lucky thing was to not wash his wrestling outfit, his jumper.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so it was pretty horrendous at times.
Well, and that probably became a ritual that actually did start to have some sort of actual effect, right? Because
you don't want to get too close to the guy or have the match go too long, right? Even
oh, yeah.
if he is kind of punching you in the face.
Yeah, and you're under his arm.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so there's a term for this, and it's called apophenia. And it's seeing patterns in meaningless data. And we've talked about this before. Our brains despise randomness. We try to organize whenever we can, whenever we see some sort of data in front of us, we try to see patterns. We might have a grilled cheese sandwich, and we might think that it looks like the Madonna on it, as I'm sure a lot of people know this. Was that on eBay? The grilled cheese sandwich?
I think it was at some point.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was a highly sought after item because people thought, oh, that looks like the Madonna burned into the grilled cheese sandwich.
Yeah, our minds cannot help but make order out of chaos. I mean, it's how we survive. Mm-hmm. You need to be able to navigate this world that we live in and put one and two together in ways that can often save a life, that can allow us to get to work at all. It ends up being little things like you know that when you feel that kind of weird wind coming down the train tracks, mm-hmm. at a subway or train station, you're like, oh, well, the train's about to get here. But that's a very logical 1 + 2 = 3. But then in other cases, this ends up becoming what is called a type 1 error.
Yeah.
Where we end up looking for signs and putting signs together that don't really add up,
mm-hmm.
but we just think they do.
So yeah, actually there's a Scientific American article called Patternicity: Finding Meaningful Patterns in Meaningless Noise. And Michael Shermer wrote, our brains are evolved pattern recognition machines that connect the dots and create meaning out of the patterns that we think we see in nature. Sometimes A really is connected to B. Sometimes it's not. When it is, we have learned something valuable about the environment from which we can make predictions that aid in survival and reproduction. Unfortunately, we did not evolve a baloney detection network in the brain to distinguish between true and false patterns. And I love that. I thought, yeah, we really do need a baloney detection network at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it basically comes down to the fact that randomness just doesn't really fit well with us. We don't like the idea of randomness. And ultimately, as many critics have pointed out, like even a really chaotic system, there's order going on in it. And you can find order in that system, but it's not always going to be in a predictive way.
And this is called adventitious reinforcing. Again, it's that accidental association between an outcome and whatever you're doing at the time. So again, that you see people not changing their dirty socks because mm-hmm. the big game is coming and that's what they did last time. And surely if they don't wear those same socks, they will lose, right?
Yeah, I wore dirty socks and my team won. Therefore, my dirty socks altered physical reality, broke every law of physics, and somehow made that team win. Therefore, mm-hmm. I need to make sure that I wear the same dirty socks next week. But now in these cases, well, why not apply even more scrutiny to it and realize my socks need to be the same level of dirty they are now? If they are more dirty, then maybe it'll tip the balance. And then it ends up this like complicated chemistry.
Well, that's
assignment.
When it becomes a problem, because that's when you can really kind of screw yourself, right? Because is first a talisman to kind of help you through psychologically.
Then it becomes an obsession.
Then it becomes an obsession, and then you could really kind of throw your game, so to speak. I thought it was really interesting that behaviorist B.F. Skinner took this up with
pigeons.
Yeah. And he put a few half-starved pigeons in a box and put food pellets down a chute at random intervals. And the pigeons began to think, or at least he thought this, because who knows what pigeons think. But he assumed that whatever they did when the food arrived somehow caused the food to arrive. So
this is like they're doing like little circles and stuff, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. He said that one bird was conditioned to turn counterclockwise about the cage, making 2 or 3 turns between reinforcements. And another repeatedly thrust its head into one of the upper corners of the cage. A third developed a tossing response.
Huh.
So it's kind of funny. Like, I don't like to think of myself as a pigeon, but, you know, looking at my past behavior and attaching meaning to things that don't necessarily have a meaning, it is sort of like we're all pigeons, you know, in a cage making these weird ritualistic turns to try to affect our environments. So it's really interesting. This is from a BBC article, Go Figure Why We Think Rituals Can Influence Outcome. They say the experiment might be said to demonstrate a sort of superstition. The bird behaves as if there was a causal relation between its behavior and the presentation of food, although such a relation is lacking.
Huh. Well, you know, it reminds me a lot of our previous research into placebos, too.
Yeah.
And certainly some of the literature makes this correlation as well, because, like, it could be something as simple as I need to be at my mental best for this meeting that I have every week, right? So I must have some sort of an energy drink to mm-hmm. boost me up. And then, but to what extent is that energy drink actually increasing your performance? And to what extent is it just a ritual, a superstitious ritual that has to take place for you to feel confident enough to go into the into the meeting?
To get into the mindset.
Yeah. And okay, you can make an argument that, yeah, you're getting a caffeine boost, but now replace the energy drink with a like a rosary or a little amulet or some sort of magical ceremony you perform on the floor in front of the meeting room with chalk and candles or something.
Yeah, and then I'm just thinking of that, and then you're on your way to OCD and you start tapping three times, which it's just interesting to see how you can take this to the nth degree and your behavior really begins to splinter a little bit.
Well, speaking of knocking and splinters, there's the whole knock on wood thing, right? That's like a classic example. I don't think of myself as being particularly superstitious. You know, I'll be talking about something and I'll accidentally, mention some sort of horrible thing that has not happened yet. And then I'll be like, knock on wood. And then I have to find wood to knock on. Like it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, the whole salt shaker thing, spill some salt and you have to throw some over your shoulder.
Right.
I'll find myself doing that just because I'll have spilled a little salt and I'll be like, well, it doesn't hurt, right? So I'll take like one grain and then I'll position myself so that if I throw it over my shoulder, it goes into the sink. So that way I'm also not making a mess.
I think the roots of that are in shamanism too, right?
Oh, yeah?
I think that it's like to dispel evil spirits.
Huh.
Somehow I have that lodged in one of the nooks there. But I mean, I'm sure that many different cultures have many different interpretations for the whole salt trick.
Right.
But nonetheless, it's a ritual, right?
Right. But then again, I would not freak out if I did. Oh, another one is the stepping on a crack and breaking your mother's back, which I don't think there's ever been a proven cause and effect with that.
Yeah.
Nobody actually believes that, anyone with a healthy mind does not believe that they're stepping on a crack will somehow harm the vertebrae of their mother, but people do get bent out of shape about it in some cases. So, I mean, it just if you end up letting it get ahead of you.
Yeah, and you see this too in extreme cases where if someone has lost a person, they start to see signs everywhere of, they might have, I think I read something about it. It was one guy who lost his son committed suicide, and he began to see signs in everything, a open clothespin, and, all these different, like 45-degree angle shapes. And he began to think that that was pointing to the time that his son had committed suicide. And again, this is us trying to have some sort of mastery over what we can't control.
Mm-hmm.
Probably helped him a lot to think, well, okay, there are signs that are pointing just to at least tell me some aspect of this, the time that my son passed away, or to get a better rooted feeling in what had happened. So it's interesting to see it in that
and
way.
You can take that situation, though, trying to master something you can't control. And if you you transpose it back on some like prehistoric setting, some guy trugging through the woods and there is a predator out there that could conceivably eat him or a human enemy. And your amount of control over what is going to happen depends on your ability to pick up signs in the world around you. The sound of footsteps. In the dark, the silhouette of something against the moonlight,
right?
Things of that nature,
right? And so we're sort of hardwired to err on that side, right? Which is better for us because that's why we have gotten to the point we have, right, as a species.
Because then it's a false alarm, and that's when we laugh, right?
Right.
According to some
of
the theories about laughter, laughter is a response to say, "Oh, I'm not really in physical danger."
Yeah, it's a release.
Yeah, and a signal to other humans that, oh, we're not really going to die. It's all right. That wasn't really a saber-toothed tiger. But better to be sure, err on the side of caution, like you say.
That's right. Behind every good joke is a false saber-toothed tiger in a way, right?
Right.
Because it's a benign threat.
Trust no one. You heard it here. Yeah.
That's right. When we come back, we are going to talk about Lady Luck and if she actually exists.
This podcast is brought to you by Intel, the sponsors of tomorrow, and the Discovery Channel. At Intel, we believe curiosity is the spark which drives innovation. Join us at curiosity.com and explore the answers to life's questions.
All right, and we're back. So, Lady Luck, real or not? Is luck a lady?
Luck is not a lady tonight. I don't know. I mean, it's a nice thought, right? Luck's a lady. She's shining down on you. She has a bugle beaded dress on.
Thank you for resisting the urge to break into song, by the way.
I mean, this podcast isn't over yet.
Okay.
Okay. There is an article called Apophenia Definitions and Analysis by Sandra L. Hubscher, and it's really interesting. She talks about the gambler's fallacy and holds that in a sequence of random events, past outcomes influence future outcomes. The off-sided example is a game of roulette where black has spun seven times in a row. The players around the table begin to feel, all the players, right?
Mm-hmm.
They all begin to feel that their luck is running out and that the red is due soon, or that they're having a streak and black will continue to appear, when in actuality, the probability of the next spin being red or black is the same as ever.
Huh.
And this, I mean, you see this all the time in gambling, right? There's this idea that, you know, you've got good luck tonight. But that's kind of what gets us in trouble. And according to Psychology Today, luck really actually wouldn't exist without the following conditions.
Okay.
Okay.
You rabbit have, foot.
Rabbit foot, troll.
Troll doll. Okay.
Troll doll.
Yeah.
You have to take a chance in order to have a chance.
Okay.
Which is kind of a duh thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's like if you don't play the lottery, you cannot win the lottery.
Exactly. But studies show that when outcomes are uncertain, pessimistic people tend to avoid these situations and are averse to risk, right?
Okay.
Whereas optimistic people don't. So optimism is actually necessary to take a chance. So not only do you have to take a chance, but you kind of have to be like, yeah, hey, I'm taking a chance, right?
Okay. So it goes back to that, that optimism boost we were talking about.
Yeah.
Guy walks into a casino. Guy feels confident enough to play roulette because he has, a statue of Buddha in his pocket.
Well, and even just map it back to other times in your life where you felt lucky.
Okay.
Something happened, the sequence of events. I always think about this. It always feels like something builds up to something happening. And I always think, oh, yeah, there's this pattern here. But the fact of the matter is that I happened to be in the right place at the right time. But not only that, I was open to the experience.
Yeah.
And had put myself out there or whatever it was. So that's kind of how I think about it. You've got the gambler, yes, who did it. They gambled. So therefore, you know, they got a 50% chance whether or not they're going to make good on it. But that's about the same for anything that you try to do in your life, right?
More or less.
I guess it depends on what you're trying to do. Yeah. Sometimes there's like 10%, sometimes 75%.
But still, there's a chance.
There's a chance. Yeah. The second thing is unexpected actions come from the subconscious. Your unconscious brain may actually see what you need to see before your conscious brain knows. This is called preemptive perception, and it's thought to be subserved by part of the parietal lobe of the brain.
Yeah, this reminds me of priming memory, which is one of the types of memory that we've talked about in the past, where you're not consciously aware of it, but your brain is forming this this pattern. It's associating one thing with the other.
Yeah. Yeah, and it actually reminds me too of the free will podcast that we did, and we talked about this the eye of ourselves, the conscious, that we are the last person to actually learn what our decision is, because all of these other things are taking place in our brain that could have been culminating there for an hour, a year, or even 10 years.
Right.
And so there's things going on under the surface that are really helping to inform you. So
we're like the false memory where we pointed out that some experiments have suggested that our brain knows when, even though we think a false memory is true, deep down our brain knows that false memory is false.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's there's somewhere, there's a center there in our brains that can sniff out the difference.
Yeah. So at conscious level, we're not putting one and two together about what's about to happen, but below the surface, our brain already knows or thinks it knows what's going to happen.
And this has been observed in studies in MRI,
right,
which is really fascinating. So the Psychology Today is basically saying when you next sense something, that you should actually take it seriously before you discard it, because there is some sort of basis.
Gut instinct kicking in. Yeah,
right. Exactly. The third is to tap into your empathy.
Oh, yes. This is, of course, especially when you're dealing with other people. You're playing a game.
Poker,
or even something like, you know, Scrabble or Words with Friends or anything where there is a human intellect on the other side.
You're in a hot water situation too, right?
Yeah.
Not that we're advocating hot water situations.
Yeah. Like, don't play Scrabble in a hot tub. It's a recipe for
disaster.
Exactly
what I was talking about.
The pieces are going to get so soggy.
Or be a jewel thief and then get caught.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a game of cat and mouse.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're inevitably, thinking about, trying to think, what is the other guy or gal thinking about?
Mm-hmm.
Let me try and put myself in their shoes so I can outsmart them. I mean, this is a basic principle of our cognitive architecture, because so much of of our brain activity is devoted to trying to determine how, say, a prey animal is going to react, how an adversary is going to react, how even how friends, enemies, loved ones, et cetera, how they're going to react, and so that we can tailor our behavior to reach the most desired outcome.
That's right, and this is theory of mind.
Right.
We talked about it in our Don't Eat the Panda podcast, which is basically like, you know, the ability to anticipate someone else's actions also necessitates empathy.
Right.
Which in that case is why you sometimes feel bad about eating an animal, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the really boiled down point there. But when you're trying to sway your luck, you have to be able to, like you say, inhabit the other person's mind. And your brain can actually mirror the intentions of people automatically. It's able to do this, right? Mm-hmm. And we already know this through mirror neurons.
Unless you're a replicant, of course.
Yeah, then it's going to be, I don't know, 5-10 years out before they can really, you know, tinker with that to make it exact. But people who are more empathetic may be better at doing this, and doing so may accurately read what another person is going to do. And again, this could come in really handy with poker. On the flip side, too, you can actually influence the outcome of a situation by not radiating something like nervousness, which would tip off the other person that they need to observe you closer and they need to search for a threat. So if you affect a sense of calm, you're essentially faking it until you make it, which might feel like luck to you. You know, if the other person is buying into it, when in fact it's just this complex symphony of functions in your brain that's being carried out.
Huh.
And you feel like you just got lucky.
Now, and when it comes to thinking about our brain's ability to perceive connections and make connections between sometimes diverse ideas, I can't help but think of creativity.
Right.
Which so much creativity, especially in a world where everything has been done before, a lot of it boils down to, can I create new patterns? You know, such as, The Exorcist has been done. Mad Men has been done. But what if you combine the two and you have an exorcist whose whole job is to remove advertising demons from, you know, something
so
of that
Don
nature.
Draper is the exorcist?
Or the demon.
Or
I don't know.
Is he Reagan, the child?
Or both. I don't know. This idea hasn't been completely fleshed out.
Okay, we'll get back to that.
Yeah. We don't want to give away the secrets. We haven't pitched it yet. But yeah, so our creativity works on establishing new patterns and new connections.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't help but make the comparison here between that and luck.
Yeah, there's Peter Brueger is a neurobiologist, and he's actually talked about this before. And he says that this ability of creative people to link and associate and prefer remote over close associations to the heart of – it really gets to the heart of creative – thinking, but also paranormal and delusional thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not that you have to be delusional in order to be creative and make all these patterns, but certainly there is a parallel there, right? In both instances, that person is willing to really sort of run with the pattern recognition that they see.
Right.
And spin off even more patterns, which is, you know, one of the hallmarks of creativity, as we've have researched before.
Right. And not just fiction-based creativity, which is an easy model to turn to, but creativity, say, in a business setting where one is seeing patterns in the marketplace and in consumer reactions, so that kind of thing.
Brueger also found a connection with dopamine, actually, and levels of dopamine in people. He found that people with high levels of dopamine are more likely to find significance and coincidence and pick out meaning and patterns where there are none. In one trial in which skeptics and paranormal believers were both given the drug L-DOPA, which increases dopamine.
L-DOPA.
The skeptics began to perform much more like the believers in the studies, which I think is fascinating.
Wow. So... That's really fascinating. Yeah, because, and I mean, I instantly think of like pumping this into, say, a church environment or a temple or you know, environment to just to sort of give people a little extra boost to get superstitious about things. I can't help but think of like someone going in to see a priest and being like, "Father, I'm having a crisis of faith," and then the priest saying, "Well, here, take three of these. This should boost your dopamine levels, and then you'll be good," you know.
Wow. Can it get down to that level?
Maybe. I mean, not that
That's
you could
question,
take a pill
right?
and it would, I think, you know, completely change the way you view the world. But what we're talking about here does underline some of those connections, though, between the chemical us
and
the spiritual us.
Yeah. There, at a chemical level, it does inform our perception, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of fascinating. I did want to make another mention about creativity. Again, this is from Sandra Hupshire's article. She was talking about creative innovation, and she was saying, you know, again, it's the ability to understand and express novel, orderly relationships, and that, in fact, Leonardo da Vinci advised his students to, quote, look at walls covered with many stains with the idea of imagining some scene you will see in it similarity to landscapes adorned with mountains, rivers, rocks, trees, plains, broad valleys and hills of all kinds, also battles and figures with lively gestures and strange faces and costumes and an infinity of things which you can reduce to separate and complex forms.
Huh. Well, this, of course, brings to mind constellations. The pattern of the stars is, of course, intensely complicated. As we discussed in the shark episode, you know, NASA has complicated algorithmic programs designed to look at the night sky and make sense of it all.
Mm-hmm.
But constellations, a very ancient form of looking at the stars and making sense of it by, at times, desperately forming patterns amid those stars to create something like a Big Dipper or a guy with a bow and arrow or some sort of an animal. And I think you can definitely make the case that as out there some of those connections are, those connections have allowed us to more easily make sense of a very complicated system in the sky above.
Well, and once you name it, don't you feel some sort of level of comfort for it too? I mean, I'm sure that, again, it's that trying to master your environment and feel some sort of sense of control.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not all bad, right? I mean, patterns, again, that's what's gotten us so far here.
We live in a chaotic system, but one where there are patterns. So it's just to the extent that we can avoid overcompensating and just finding unreal patterns everywhere, then I think we're okay.
I think of it as the continental drift theory. Like, this is a good example of why patterns are important,
where
pattern recognition.
People looked at maps and they said, hey, wouldn't that piece fit here? I bet those two places were joined together.
Yeah, Alfred Wegener, who's actually the person who recognized the puzzle piece-like fit of the continents and came up with this theory in part because of this pattern recognition. And, of course, that sat around for like 30 years or so before someone was able to corroborate it with, you know, other information. But, again, I mean, this is stuff that can lead to breakthroughs if harnessed right.
Or it can lead to crazy conspiracy theories that seriously damage one's reputation.
It's a power. Yeah. You just have to learn to use it, right?
All right. Well, let's see if any of our listeners got lucky, and I drew their listener mail.
Here, let me turn it.
Oh, here we go. And let me grab this one. All right. This one is from Lisa. Lisa says, may I start off by saying that I absolutely love this podcast and all the others from How Stuff Works. So, see, that one was kind of like, oh, and then she likes all of them. So. I mean, but they're all great.
Yeah, they are all awesome.
it would have been different if she said, well, let me say that I absolutely love this podcast and all other podcasts. And then it feels a little less special. But no.
We take it.
We take the compliment. I wouldn't be able to make my 45-minute drive to and from work every day without it. I recently listened to your podcast on misophonia, and I was rather surprised this is an actual diagnosed problem. I have never been to the doctor, nor have I ever seen the need to be checked out because it has never really bothered me, bothered my day-to-day life. But every time I hear someone's fingernail scratching a car, I definitely react to it. I do not simply cringe like you would if you heard a chalkboard being scratched. Instead, it makes me feel like I'm going to turn inside out. Hey, we did a podcast on that too.
Yeah, we did.
Cry. Haven't done one on that. And or gag. I think that's coming up. All at the same time. My younger brother used to do this just to mess with me, and I would suddenly become insanely enraged and start screaming for him to stop. Obviously, this isn't a normal sound you hear when you are around others, so it has never really interfered with my life. I have always thought it was just a strong reaction to a bad sound, but now I can't help but wonder. Obviously, I'm not going to try to diagnose myself. I'll leave that up to a doctor. Thank you guys for everything.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, we received a lot of cool comments regarding that episode.
We did, and it was really interesting to hear people's takes on the things that really bother them. And so many people had discovered that, they could put a name to this, whether or not, you know, it was actually diagnosed by a doctor yet.
And it opened up the door for a lot of listeners to write in and just tell us about annoying things in their life. Like, my uncle has the worst cough. let me tell you.
I know, but it's kind of awesome.
It is awesome.
Because
I love
things
that.
Got so specific.
Yeah,
you know?
Like the one about the socks and the carpet.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Even though I'm like, well, at first I'm like, wow, that doesn't annoy me at all. But it definitely makes sense when you look at the overall issue and the overall condition.
Right.
Like, well, it makes sense.
How subtle it is. Yeah.
We also heard from Don. Don writes in and says, I'm so glad you did a podcast on misophonia. My whole life I've been told I have sensitive innards because of my aversion to all sorts of sounds. I have always thought that my husband was just a loud person. While he does suffer with allergies, which causes him to sometimes chew with his mouth open, snort, and breathe loudly, my reaction is to want to run away or punch him in the face. I am absolutely guilty of looking him right in the eye to mock him with obnoxious chewing and slurping noises. So embarrassing. Funnily enough, when my children were very small, I loved the tiny sounds they made while eating. As they age, however, the sounds are becoming, for lack of a better word, irritating. I also can't stand the sound of water running out of a faucet, which is probably why I allow my husband to be in charge of the dishes. It's nice to put a name to the weirdness. Thank you. Indeed, it is nice to be able to put a name to the weirdness. And as we discussed, I think that's the first step, at least with sort of normal, non-clinical cases of this. That's the first step to being able to control it.
Right.
To be able to say, well, this is what's going on. This is at least some form of misophonia, perhaps.
This is how my brain is processing.
This is how my brain is processing information. And if we're aware of that, then we're in a better position to be like, well, let me not let that get out of hand.
Yeah.
Let me not yell at someone. Right.
Again,
now.
You get to name it, and then you can control it to an extent.
So yeah, if you want to share anything with us, feel free to contact us on Facebook or Twitter. We are Blow the Mind on both of those, and we update those feeds regularly with all sorts of cool stuff.
And you can always drop us an email at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. Kings Island is now open on weekends.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.